Okay, we're going to move to the last case. Washington versus Howard. Okay. Washington versus Howard. Is it Mr. Filipovits?
Filipovits, Your Honor.
Filipovits, congratulations on getting a background that looks like our courtroom in Atlanta. Well done.
I ensured it was not copyrighted.
That's pretty creative. Will you please speak with us?
May it please the court, my name is Jeff Filipovits. I represent Ms. Washington in this appeal. When Heard saw Ms. Washington in person and said, "That's not her," at that point, she should have been released. Had the detective—
Why is that? I mean, it seems to me that the officer's been told a lot of other things that would suggest it is her. Why is it that the officer is obliged to necessarily credit that?
Because
from someone who has confessed to a crime, and therefore, there may be some issues with believing that individual. Why isn't there still at least probable cause here?
Because her arrest was predicated solely on Heard identifying my client based on a photograph that was provided by a confidential informant. We don't know anything about the basis of that CI's knowledge, and neither did the detective in this case. We don't know anything about the photograph because the photograph was not preserved. We don't know if it was blurry. We don't know if it was recent. We don't even know if it was truly Ms. Washington. So the arrest is predicated on Heard's identification of a photograph. When Ms. Washington appears in person and Heard says, "That's not her," what we are left with is, what is the strength of that prior identification? We know the information from the CI is not sufficient for probable cause, because all that was she may have been involved with no other explanation for that knowledge. We know that Howard does not have any other basis for probable cause other than that photographic identification. Ms. Washington, in her interview, explained her whereabouts, offered alibi witnesses, volunteered her cell phone password, and did everything she could to try to—
The problem is when you surprise this person who has previously identified your client, and make it clear to her that this individual now is the source of her identification, and he says, "Oh, that's not her." Isn't there reason though to still believe that that's not necessarily the case?
If that photograph was a fair and accurate representation of Ms. Washington, such that it was so clear that Mr. Heard was speaking of the exact same person, if he was saying that's the person I saw in the photograph.
My problem is going to this. It would seem to me that he might recant his previous identification in the presence of someone who would have a motive to exact revenge.
He could, but I don't know that recant is necessarily the right word. If the photograph was an accurate picture of Ms. Washington, perhaps recant is the appropriate word. But if the photograph was not clear, and we don't know because the detective did not keep it, if the photograph did not represent Ms. Washington, I don't think it's fair to view this as a recantation of an identification so much as him saying, "That's not the person who I saw in the photograph," or "That's not the person who was there with me."
What was the state of the law with respect to telling a police officer what he's supposed to do when he makes an arrest based on a warrant? that then may be questionable.
When this court has established well before this case that in the context of a malicious prosecution case, probable cause is required to initiate and continue a prosecution. And so that's Wood versus Kessler.
Excuse me. What I'm interested in is what law tells the police officer on your own, you can decide there's no probable cause, or if you question the probable cause, you have to alert the judicial officer that issued the warrant and have them take the action.
If you uncover exculpatory evidence after presenting information to a magistrate, the law that requires a, and I don't believe the district court or the opposing party disputes that the law is clearly established at on this front, is that probable cause is required to, this is a 2008 case, Jelson versus Mills, to continue a prosecution, not just arrest or initiate or institute a prosecution. Wood versus Kessler in 2003, criminal prosecution continued without probable cause can be malicious prosecution. And so when facts come to light to an officer that undermine the information that had just been presented to a magistrate, I believe the duty to update that magistrate with the new information is established.
Well, that's you not understanding the question. The question is, In this case, aren't you arguing that the police officer should have immediately released the person? Or are you arguing that he should have gone back to the issuing officer and said there's a mistake here?
The latter. He should have gone back to the magistrate and alerted the magistrate of the new developments.
So what your position is that by not doing that, then the actionable malicious prosecution action occurred?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor. I'm not sure.
How long do you have? I guess my question is, so let's assume that he continues the interrogation of your client and he tells another officer, can you go tell the magistrate that there could be a problem, okay? And the magistrate denies the request or says, I think that probable cause still exists. What then?
Then the officers acted reasonably by informing the magistrate, and so long as no information is misrepresented to the magistrate, or so long as the information presented isn't so obviously lacking of probable cause, then the magistrate's decision would insulate the officer.
I'm having a hard time understanding something. So you're saying the analogous common law tort for the Fourth Amendment violation is malicious prosecution?
Yes, sir.
All right. So the elements of which are so you had process that was issued here. You had an arrest warrant supported by probable cause at the time that it issued. How is what you're arguing now lining up with that common law tort?
Well, I guess the question is, the gateway question is a Fourth Amendment or 14th Amendment claim. I'm not sure if framing it that way is the right way to attack this, but what we have—
Well, what the Supreme Court has told us that we have to do in these Fourth Amendment cases under 1983 is look for guidance from a common law tort analog from the time that Section 1983 was adopted. What really matters, of course, is the constitutional violation, but that's what we look to for guidance. We've issued a series of opinions about this recently. And I'm having a hard time following it.
So this court's previously stated that probable cause is required to initiate and continue a prosecution. Now, in this case, the arrest happened in the court over the court. Arrest lasted for about 25 hours. So what we have here is a seizure that could be justified as a warrantless arrest.
But there was a warrant.
There was, but as the court—
So this isn't false arrest, or as the common law tort analog. You're saying it's malicious prosecution, right?
Yes.
Yes. You're saying it's after the officer understood or should have understood that your client was not the person, they had a duty or an obligation to go to the issuing magistrate to let them know that there was a problem with the warrant. And by continuing the interrogation, then there was a violation, a constitutional violation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, my problem is I don't understand how that lines up with the common law tort.
Well, what I lined it up with in pleading the case is the prior statements from this court that probable cause is required to continue a prosecution. The duty to assess probable cause on an ongoing basis certainly applies to warrantless arrests, and there is
Is it based on the theory of being held without probable cause? It's not based on it from the issuance of the arrest warrant or the arrest pursuant to the warrant. It's on the notion that once you've had this later information come to your attention, is it a false imprisonment argument?
I don't think it is a false, under the 14th Amendment, I don't think the 14th Amendment is the right way to view it. I think that an officer learns after the fact that information presented to a magistrate is either false or, you know, has developed differently at such that is more.
And you're not saying that he can release him. You're saying he has to go back to the magistrate and inform him, and that cuts off his liability. And I'm just having a hard time seeing how that lines up with any established law, of which I'm aware.
Well, the law is that an officer must testify truthfully to their best of their knowledge to a magistrate.
There's no untruthful testimony that you showed here to a magistrate.
But when subsequent facts develop such that
he didn't go back to the magistrate, so he didn't testify falsely. You're saying he should have gone back.
I'm not saying he testified falsely. I'm saying what he learned later cast the prior statements that were presented to a magistrate as in a false light, and the magistrate should be presented with that information to continue the seizure.
And what's the clearly established law that would have put him on notice of that?
Of the obligation to assess probable cause on an ongoing basis, I'd cite Wood versus Kessler, Jelson versus Mills, and the other cases that are cited in our brief.
Okay.
And I think the principle is established broadly that
okay. Mr. Phillip, it's you've saved some time for rebuttal. So unless you want to cut into that, I think maybe we need to hear from Mr. Hensel.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard. I think I can sum things up succinctly. With the understanding that the trial court granted Investigator Howard qualified immunity in this. So I'm looking at this from an arguable probable cause standpoint. If I'm looking at...
We're not talking about a warrantless arrest, right? We're talking about an arrest based on a warrant.
Correct. Which, so I understand that...
False arrest is not the common law tort analog, right?
Correct.
It'd be malicious prosecution.
Correct.
Okay.
At the time that Ms. Washington alleges that Mr. Hurd said, that's not her, which we dispute. At that time, the information known to Investigator Howard was he was contacted by an outside agency, Noonan Police Department, said, I've got a CI who has given me this photograph, and I identified that person as a Vivian Washington, who works at a pizza place with two of the other suspects involved in the underlying crime. We've then shown that photograph to Mr. Hurd, and Mr. Hurd has said, yeah, that's her, that's the girl that I was with. Based on that information alone, there's probable cause to continue.
Is there any evidence that's to dispute that that's what the officer was told?
No, Your Honor, that is the record evidence that's before the court. At that time, even if there's a that's not her, the requirement that Investigator Howard give up, call the magistrate, say, nope, that's it, it's all over with, is onerous, it's untenable, and it's incorrect. What he did was what he should have done, which continued that investigation. Within an hour or so, she is hooked up to a polygraph and fails it. She is asked if she was involved in underlying crime. She says no, and that was incorrect according to the polygraph. She then confesses some minutes later to being involved in the crime. It is only, and this is not in dispute, it's only when Miss Washington tells Investigator Howard all of these crazy facts that are not possible under the Dow crime, that Investigator Howard says, wait a minute, this girl can't be involved in this. That is, according to Miss Washington, she believes that that's the first time that Investigator Howard said, oh, wait, I can't believe this anymore. And is that's the time when he goes to Heard recants. Still, there's so much back and forth there that Investigator Howard brings Heard to the polygraph. And then that's when everything comes to light. And then that's when Investigator Howard correctly contacts the magistrate, cancels the warrant, and apologizes to Miss Washington for all of the confusion and releases her, gets a deputy to drive her home even, tells her to call her mom and apologizes and is very remorseful about the situation. So the probable cause, when it dissipates, is there. And that's when Investigator Howard did everything in his power to ensure that Miss Washington's constitutional rights were in order there. I mean, that's the gist of the argument here, is that the probable cause did not dissipate until after all of that stuff had happened. And it would be onerous and incorrect, like I said, to have Investigator Howard just throw his hands up after he hears that that's not her in passing by a suspect.
I guess, you know, the problem I'm having is, I mean, I don't know where onerous comes from in the law. I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is what's the constitutional violation? And then whether there's any law that clearly establishes that that is a constitutional violation, of which the officer should have been on notice.
Correct.
Both of the elements that I have to consider for purposes of qualified immunity, I'm having a hard time understanding here.
Well, the constitutional violation, as petitioner alleges, occurs when there's that's not him, but that's incorrect. If there was a constitutional violation, it would have been.
And his argument is that supports that the failure to go back to the magistrate and inform the magistrate about that new development somehow supports the common law tort analog for malicious prosecution. But I don't know where that comes from.
I do not either, Your Honor, and I don't have any case law that suggests that's the case. When the probable cause dissipates, that's when there's the requirement to go to the magistrate, and at that point, it had not occurred. When it did occur, Investigator Howard did everything in his power to remedy the situation.
Yeah.
I don't have anything further if anybody has any questions. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to provide this extra time back to the court.
Thank you. Mr. Filipovich.
As far as the source of the constitutional violation, and if an officer makes an arrest pursuant to a warrant which they obtained or whose partner obtained it for them, and learns that information, let's take it out of this case, learns that information is false and learns that person is innocent, the Constitution cannot support allowing that person to remain incarcerated.
That may be, it's just not entirely clear to me that this officer would have necessarily been on notice given everything that he had been told beforehand, that the suspect's declaration that's not her, that had to be credited, and probable cause has been eliminated. And my understanding is, based on what you've said today, you're not saying the officer was obliged to release the suspect. You're saying that the suspect, that the officer instead was somehow required to go back to the magistrate and inform the magistrate of this development. And I'm trying to understand where that comes from in the law.
I think I've, as far as the source of the law, what is in our brief and what I've said today is what I can say on that. I'd like to touch briefly on.
Now, any of those cases say that an officer would have to go back to the magistrate judge, the magistrate? What's your best case for that?
The best case for going back to the magistrate would be, I think the principle, the broadly established principle, I think it is best established in Barnett versus MacArthur. I acknowledge that applies to warrantless arrests, but so yeah, we can't apply.
We're not talking about a warrant.
I understand, but I'm struggling with the notion that the Constitution allows an officer to seek a warrant, uncover exculpatory evidence after the warrant is issued, and then while in the midst of that investigation, not inform the magistrate that this new evidence has been uncovered so that probable cause can be reassessed. I think that the principle of the Fourth Amendment is that officers have a duty to assess probable cause when new information comes to light. They don't have a duty to seek it out, but if they uncover this information, they must reassess probable cause. In the context of a warranted arrest, the only way to reassess probable cause is to present that information to the magistrate who issued the warrant in the first instance. I think that principle has to apply in our society. Otherwise, an officer could make an arrest based on a haphazard investigation, uncover, well, I'm out of time.
I think we understand your case. I hope we do. I have some lingering doubts, but I think we've probably done as much as we can this morning. We appreciate your arguments and helping us this morning. We'll be in recess until tomorrow.